Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Today is Wednesday, and that means we start out with news on walnuts.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board.
According to the USDA, the 2021 California walnut production is forecast at 670,000 tons, which is down 15% from 2020's record production of 785,000 tons. The forecast is based on 385,000 bearing acres, which is up 1% from 2020's estimated bearing acreage of 380,000. Widespread freezing temperatures in late fall of 2020 resulted in frost damage to walnut orchards across the state. Growers reported the frost damage delayed leaf out and reduced nut set in affected orchards. Additionally, because of the state's drought conditions, orchards experienced a higher degree of freeze injury. Walnut growers throughout the state struggled with drought conditions and water availability, as most of the state is in a drought emergency. Chilling hours were up from last year. Estimated nut sets, size measurements, average number of trees per acre, and estimated bearing acreage were used in the statistical models. In other news, some more health benefits from walnuts. New research published in the American Heart Association's flagship journal, Circulation, says healthy older adults who ate a handful of walnuts, or about a half a cup a day, for 2 years, modestly lowered their level of low-density lipoprotein, or LDL cholesterol, levels. Consuming walnuts daily also reduced the number of LDL particles, a predictor of cardiovascular disease risk. The study explored the effects of a walnut-enriched diet on overall cholesterol in elderly individuals from diverse geographical locations and spanning 2 years. Our Taylor Chalstrom recently sat down with Fran Niederhoser, the UCCE Farm Advisor for Colusa, Sutter, and Yuba counties, to discuss activator spray adjuvant selection in trees and vines and matching the proper material to the job. Here's part of that interview.
Franz, my first question for you here. Activator adjuvants can have a place in tree and vine crop sprays, but matching the material to the job can be a little tricky. When might growers consider using an adjuvant in their tank mix? And, you know, how do they determine really which one to use?
Well, the easy answer is if it's on the label. So there are some labels, some products that specify a certain adjuvant material. Activator, it might be a pH adjustment, might be a penetrator. There's some in some labels that say don't use this particular activator or adjuvant. So that's the number one thing is if it's on the label, or if it's specifically not, label specifies not to use it. That's critical. As far as the decisions, if it's not on the label, but the label says maybe use with an adjuvant to improve efficacy, things of that nature. Working with an experienced PCA who can make the recommendation, that's a really good step. That a PCA with that kind of experience has seen this product, that product combination that's being recommended across a range of applications, a lot more experience than you'd be able to develop on your own place. So that's really critical. There are a lot of materials out there, different adjuvants, different pesticide formulations, products. Having somebody who does that every day, as PCAs do, it's really good to have in your court to help you make the right decision.
I'm curious, in the instance where a grower maybe is thinking about using an adjuvant that is not listed on the label, but it's not necessarily listed to not used, what do they do there?
Well, it depends upon the job. If you're putting on a cover spray, you want something that's going to not penetrate into the tissue so much, but be more of a spreader. If you have something that is a translaminar that gets into the plant, works that way. Penetrating type material. Ahead of rainfall, a rain fast or a sticker might reduce the amount would slow the wash off effect. Or sometimes a humectant has a, well, if you're going to be applying in a really dry atmosphere, high evaporation conditions, a humectant, which slows the rate of evaporation is a good product to use. So really, what's the material you're using? What's the mode of action for the pesticide? The activator, the adjuvant, it really is a assists the pesticide. It's not going to make or break the job. Again, less on the label, separate from the what the active is in the tank.
And yeah, you were mentioning just a little bit ago some of those main classifications for some of the adjuvants, like penetrators and whatnot. You know, growers do really have a number of choices when considering these adjuvants for their tank mixes. What are some of those main classifications of the available adjuvants at the moment, and what are some of their characteristics?
Well, the wetter spreaders reduce the surface tension, and they literally make the droplets run across the surface. They don't make the droplets jump from leaf to leaf, but if you get some material on a leaf, you're going to get much more much more spread from, you know, an organosilicone or there are some non-ionic surfactants that have, well, most of them have some spreading capacity, but the super spreaders, the organosilicones are the best. They're called super spreaders because they do reduce the surface tension to a degree that if you're not careful, you can actually run the product right off the leaf or your target surface, which you don't want to do. So matching your rate, again, back to working with a good PCA, matching your rate to the job and the size of the tree, the amount of surface area that you're trying to cover, that's really important with the spreaders. The penetrators, generally those are oil-based, either petroleum oil, like a crop oil concentrate, or a vegetable oil material, like some of the methylated seed oils. Those are intended to get materials through the waxy surface of the leaf. And that's beneficial in some, you know, you're trying to get the pesticide into the plant, whether it's a miticide like abamectin or an herbicide, get past the protective leaf surface. Those materials, not necessarily great spreaders on their own, but they're intended to penetrate. And that's one of the reasons why the oils are such good penetrators. That's one of the reasons why, say, zinc nutrient or sulfur labels say don't apply with an oil, because you want the zinc or the sulfur on the leaf surface. It's toxic inside the leaf, and the oil will drive that material across the leaf surface. And So that's penetrators. In humectants, sometimes they're oils, other times certain hydrophilic fertilizers are humectants. And stickers are oftentimes resin type materials or materials that resin based plant, but there's some plant based materials, pine byproducts that literally mix in with the fertilizer, with the pesticide, and keep it from dissolving in rainwater. Which, you know, part of your goal is to, if a rain's coming, you got a fungicide on, you want to redistribute that fungicide, as putting a sticker on it may not be the tool that you want, or using a sticker when you really want to penetrate the material, that would be counterproductive. So those are some of the major ones. I didn't mention acidifiers, also usually going to be an acid type material. Those are important if the job calls for it.
We're going to be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Hi, we're back talking with Franz Niederholzer, UCCE Farm Advisor for Colusa, Sutter, and Yuba Counties, about activator spray adjuvant selection in trees and vines and matching the proper material to the job. Franz, my next question for you here, what are the cautions growers should be aware of, you know, if the wrong adjuvant is chosen, and can it damage the crop or the tree?
That's a great question. You have to be very careful. Certain combinations and it's very difficult. Certain combinations can lead to phyto issues on the leaves, and in a worst case scenario, on a fresh fruit where you're damaging the marketable product. It's very hard to know which combinations do the damage. And because the value of tank mixing, the economic value of tank mixing is so great, nobody wants to make two applications when they can make one. You end up mixing different active ingredients, different formulations, and perhaps throwing an adjuvant in there too. It's again, that back to that, having working with somebody who's got the experience to steer you to or away from a certain combination is really important. But you can really run into issues with phyto if you're not careful.
If and when it gets to the point where it's affecting marketable fruit, are growers often confusing the damage on marketable fruit with like other things, like other disease, or is it pretty distinguishable from other damage that could happen to marketable fruit?
That's a good question. Sometimes it can be, and that's why, looking at a block that's been sprayed versus a block that hasn't been sprayed, presence or absence of damage can help you get down, figure out whether it's a phyto issue or not. Where if it's phytotoxic, oftentimes you'll see the spray material may run and pool at the bottom of a fruit or bottom of a leaf. That is indicative of a burn. Whether the burn is due to the product that's applied or the combination of the surfactant and the product is hard to tell. But comparing what you've got in your orchard to other sites and where the damage is on the tissue is part of unfortunately figuring out just what went wrong if there is something there that's either worrisome or worst case potentially costly.
You can hear more of that at myaglife.com. Click on podcast. Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact TriCal Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Here's your news brief for today. The National Pork Producers Council and the American Farm Bureau Federation this week petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to take their case against California's Proposition 12. The California law would ban the sale of pork from hogs that don't meet the state's arbitrary production standards. The appeal to the high court comes after the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit in July upheld a lower court ruling against the NPPC-AFBF case. The latest trade numbers show strong U.S. agricultural exports despite transportation challenges. Michael Clements shares more.
Trade data shows U.S. exports are up this year with a significant increase in exports to China. American Farm Bureau Federation senior economist Veronica Nye shares the details.
We're in the second year of our two-year phase one commitment with China, which committed China to purchasing certain dollar values of U.S. agricultural products. So thus far in 2021, January through August, we've exported nearly $18 billion of U.S. ag products.
Nye says China is not far from the pace needed to reach the phase one commitments.
We believe the cumulative exports to China need to be about $20 billion at this point in January through August. So that means they're only 12% behind where they need to be in order to reach the 2021 total value.
Nye says U.S. 2021 exports are strong despite transportation challenges in the United States.
On the West Coast, we have port congestion. In the Gulf, they're still recovering from Hurricane Ida. So far, 2021, the U.S. has exported over $115 billion in U.S. agricultural exports, of which almost 16% of that has been going to China. U.S. ag exports are up 28% compared to the same time period in 2020. Exports to China are up almost 120%.
Michael Clements, Washington.
Reducing wasted food is a growing priority in both the United States and around the world. Stephanie Ho has more.
The issue of food loss and waste touches on many areas, including climate change and global food insecurity.
In 2019, 2 billion people around the world did not have regular access to enough safe and nutritious food. Of that, 690 million people were chronically hungry.
That was Deputy Agriculture Secretary Jule Brunner, who addressed a recent roundtable USDA hosted about efforts to reduce food loss and waste at home and abroad.
In 2015, the USDA and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or the EPA, set a goal for the nation to cut its food loss and waste by 50% by the year 2030.
She emphasized that this will be a holistic effort.
We will need everybody, from businesses involved in processing, transporting, and selling food to consumers who make food decisions every day, to pitch in to meet this ambitious goal.
One of the speakers at the USDA roundtable was Todd Lawrence with Urban Green Lab in Nashville, Tennessee.
We teach communities how to live sustainably. We want to make sure that in Nashville and in other cities that sustainable living education is just a part of daily life.
What's one secret to success? Getting involvement from all segments of society.
We try to bring the right people together at the right time.
The group's community mobilization efforts include having a steering committee made up of members from a very wide range of constituencies.
Local chefs, food scrap haulers, rescue organizations, community gardeners, gleaners, and metro government and residents alike. And that steering committee meets regularly throughout the year to really guide the direction of our programming.
Urban Green Lab is part of a regional grouping that facilitates the sharing of ideas on reducing wasted food in the southeastern United States. This kind of networking also is taking place on a global level. Speaker Filippo Gavazzini is with the Milan Urban Food Policy Pact, which was launched in 2015.
It is a global platform that has been signed for more than 200 cities that see food as an entry point for sustainable local development. And through, let's say, our platform, we provide cities useful tool to work together and share and learn best practices on food policy.
The International Pact includes more than a dozen U.S. cities. Also, more than 400 recommended actions have been collected from member cities around the world.
It's our, let's say, library of knowledge, because we ask every year signatory city to submit their best practices, and we review and assess and award the most innovative ones with a monetary prize that is used to experiment those winning policies in other cities.
In other words, the pact highlights local solutions so that cities can learn from each other. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The Milk Business Conference is set for November 30th through December 2nd this year at the Paris Hotel in Las Vegas. The event will offer educational and networking opportunities for dairy industry leaders, live and in person, and will take place before the start of the National Finals Rodeo. Farm Journal calls the event the only one that focuses exclusively on every business aspect of dairy operations. The Milk Business Conference agenda highlights include 5 megatrends in 2022 and beyond, how to become the employer of choice, turning manure into money, a firsthand and expert session on mental health, a traceability session on beef and dairy, and more. The Agriculture Secretary says keeping African swine fever out of our country and protecting our nation's swine herds involves approaches from multiple angles, Rod Bain reports.
It was not necessarily a surprise to USDA officials like Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, a confirmed case of African swine fever in Haiti. That coming days after multiple cases were detected in Haiti's neighbor on the Isle of Hispaniola, the Dominican Republic. So then what is, what might be, the U.S. response?
We will continue to underscore the importance of our international trading partners understanding and appreciating the regional nature of particular diseases and particular challenges.
That reassurance comes in several forms, according to the secretary, speaking recently before state agriculture secretaries and commissioners, including an ASF foreign animal disease protective zone around Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands.
We're really trying to convey a sense that if there's a problem in terms of banning or in terms of limiting exports, you limit it to the area that is most directly affected.
In addition to current and future domestic actions, such as increased surveillance and safeguards by USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service to keep African swine fever out of the U.S.,
I think we will see an effort in the near term of investing additional resources through APHIS to harden our system here in the U.S.
Secretary Vilsack acknowledges involvement with the Dominican Republic and Haiti will most likely be needed in eradication of affected herds.
The reality is these countries don't necessarily have either the technical assistance or the financial wherewithal to be able to do this in a way that mitigates the consequences to their producers, but at the same time quickly eradicates the problem. And I think we're going to have to basically provide the technical assistance and the resources to enable the Dominican Republic and Haiti to respond quickly and to do a thorough and complete job of eradication.
The potential of vaccines, such as one for possible commercial development for a specific strain of African swine fever, will also be a significant part in keeping ASF out of our country. To that end, the secretary says continued research and development investment is needed.
At some point in time, hopefully to find that secret sauce, if you will, of how we can create a vaccine, and then it's a matter of creating enough capacity to be able to respond quickly and effectively with a vaccine.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Beyond Meat this week announced it's debuting its Beyond Chicken tenders at select retailers nationwide. In addition to the retail rollout of the plant-based chicken tenders, Beyond Meat is also increasing its retail product distribution of other Beyond Meat products at Walmart stores, in which Beyond Meat products are currently sold, making this the third such expansion this year alone. The company promotes the Beyond Chicken tenders as a product that contains no GMOs, antibiotics, hormones, or cholesterol. That's your news for today. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
At the recent AgriPulse webinar, Sustainable Solutions for Zero Hunger by 2030, former USDA Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs, Ted McKinney, moderated the panel for the Food Systems Summit Diplomatic Spotlight. We have some of that panel for you now.
Well, I see Ambassador Mitch Feifeld there, so let me just make a quick introduction there. I love this guy's background. He is the ambassador from Australia, not to the U.S. in Washington, but to the UN in New York City. So right country, but different location. And his background is fascinating for this particular role he's in. He's a former Australian senator and cabinet minister, 15 years in the Senate. Appointments included deputy leader of the government, manager of government business in the Senate, minister for communications. There's something that's very important for this issue. Minister for the arts. There's always a lot of artistics that go into this kind of thing. But the best, I think, was his time as a reservist in the Australian Army Psychology Corps. So this is a preeminent qualified guy to go work in New York in this particular issue. So Ambassador, thank you for being with us. And let me, before I forget, say your team in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere are simply fantastic. I've met many of them.
Well, thank you so much, Ted, for your kind words. And you're quite right. We do have a great team in D.C. And thanks also very much to Elanco for inviting me to join this really important event. And thanks also to Ambassador Foster for joining me in this discussion. Well, we're all very well aware that we are 1 week out from the UN Food Systems Summit, and the topic of sustainable food systems is at the top of Australia's agenda. And colleagues of mine, particularly in Rome, have for some time been working hard to ensure that the summit's successful and to ensure that it supports our broader efforts to achieve progress on the Sustainable Development Goals. Friends, as the UN has aptly reminded us, everyone, everywhere must take action and work together to transform the way that the world produces, consumes and thinks about food. I mean, it's a good thing to think about these issues. So I'm very pleased to join you here today so that we might reflect on the important contribution of sustainable livestock and animal industries to equitable food systems and to a healthy future for all. And I just want to make it really, really clear that sustainable livestock and animal industries are an absolutely fundamental part of the story when it comes to delivering better food systems and to ending hunger. It's really a part of the Australian story. It's part of the story of Brazil. It's part of the American story. And in fact, food grown in Australia feeds more than 70 million people each year. And that's more than double our own population. It bears repeating, colleagues, that a strong and a sustainable livestock and animal sector underpinned by open and predictable global trade and international collaboration is central to the 2030 agenda. And it's a key plank of sustainable and resilient food systems in Australia and also around the world. Animal proteins absolutely provide a stable, a consistent and an affordable source of nutrition that so many of us who are on this call rely upon to feed our populations, and it just simply cannot be replaced at scale. Colleagues, friends, sustainable meat products such as those that originate from Australian industry will play a key role in helping to address food insecurity and to combat the effect of COVID-19, the effect that it's had on food systems and people. For our part, Australia is ready to collaborate with partners to secure a path forward for our food systems that is stakeholder-driven. And this is really important, that's informed by scientific evidence and also appropriate to national contexts, appropriate to national needs, and appropriate to national priorities. So we do support the Food System Summit goal of delivering more sustainable, productive, and resilient agriculture and food systems. And we do want to see the summit outcomes be balanced, be stakeholder-driven, informed by science, I say again, and take into national circumstances, take into account national circumstances, I say again, and that are non-prescriptive. Friends, the summit marks the beginning of the process rather than the endpoint. And Australia hopes that the summit will deliver new opportunities for us to collaborate with our partners to tackle food system challenges in this decade of action. Great to be with you and look forward to the chat.
Well, Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much. Word had it that you all have a few of those wonderful critters over there, so that makes you preeminently qualified to speak to this. I'll also say it was very, very important that the nexus of you in New York, where this next summit next week will take place, the final and most official summit, is important. To the audience, I'll tell you that we're still waiting for Ambassador Forrester, the Brazilian ambassador to Washington, D.C., will join us. And when he does, we'll roll over to him and give him a few options. But let me just start with a few questions to you, Mr. Ambassador, given your experience. And I can only imagine that you've been in great conversation with your farmers, your industry, and a lot of people on this topic. So let's just start. Let's get specific. Why is the UN Food System Summit important to you and to those of you in Australia? You said that you support it. Take a next dive with that, would you?
Certainly. It's important as we approach the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals to look at the practical things that we can do. Sometimes in the context of multilateral bodies, there'll be terrific overarching objectives which give assent to. But what really matters is the extent to which you can identify the practical ways to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals and making sure that there's not hunger, that people have good, nutritious meals is important. So I think the Food System Summit, which the Secretary General conceived of, was an effort to make sure that we can identify some of the practical ways of achieving those objectives. For our part in Australia, we're good at sustainable agriculture. We're good at ensuring that we have high quality product that we can export to the world. And we try and tread lightly on the planet as we do so. And our industry is always looking to be more sustainable. Our meat and livestock industry has a target of net zero as an industry by 2030. So we see this as an opportunity to talk about the good things that we do in food production so that we can share those with others. But it's also really important that the outcome of the Food System Summit is one that is based in science and that takes into account national contexts. Now, I think sometimes there can be a tendency, regardless of the forum, for people to have a bit of a sling, take a bit of a shot at what I might call industries of long standing. Now, just because an industry has been around for a while doesn't mean that it's not a good industry. Doesn't mean that it's not an industry that's always looking to improve itself and to be better. That's why it's just really important in this process that we make clear that there are a range of different sources of protein. It might be aquaculture, it might be fisheries, it might be plant-based, or it might be animal and livestock. But animal and livestock is a critical form of protein. And again, it's something that's hard to replicate at scale. So I guess that's the overarching context in which Australia is involved in the Food System Summit and how we see it. Just also something that we're seeking to do from Australia's perspective is to help amplify the voice of the Pacific. So we've organised regional dialogues with our Pacific Island colleagues to make sure that the Pacific voice is heard loud and clear as we approach the Food System Summit outcome.
The land down under is live and well. You mentioned a couple things that need some elaboration, and I'm going to put it in a two-part question. First of all, trade was mentioned precious little, if at all, during the pre-summit in Rome. You mentioned, we certainly in the U.S. know well the importance of trade. Contrasting that, I heard it directly from two or three countries talking about how there needs to be complete reliance on their own productivity, meaning all food for those citizens should come within a 200-kilometer radius, 365 days a year. Now, to those of us that know and love and appreciate trade, I was just aghast. So take that and speak to the importance of trade, not just for the benefit of Australia, but for the benefit of people around the world. That's something you know a little bit about.
Well, you know, Australia is an open trading economy. We export what we do well to the world, and there are things that other parts of the world can do better and more efficiently than we can. So it's important that you have that access to markets, both coming in and going out. And I think it's fair to observe that free trade has probably done more to lift the living standards of people in the world and to address hunger than almost anything else. Humanitarian work is incredibly important. Development work is incredibly important. But ultimately, you're going to feed people through having not just economies that are developing, and we want them to become more developed, but you need to have those channels which trade provides to ensure that you can have truly sustainable sources of food. And fair and open and predictable international agricultural trade absolutely supports the sustainability, the resilience, and the continuing function of the global food system. It contributes to food security and rural development. It's a very important mechanism for rural development is global trade. We keep markets open, if we keep trade predictable, it enables efficient agricultural food production. It also allows food to get where it's needed, including in times of crisis. That's something that's often forgotten, the importance of getting food to where it's needed in times of crisis. To meet the global food security and nutrition targets and to get back on track to meet the 2030 agenda, we have to keep continuing to work to keep the agricultural trade flows happening. And a few things that we need to have in mind as we think about that, from our perspective, is reforming the World Trade Organization rules on agriculture to promote more efficient agricultural production and trade, and also supporting the critical work of the international standard-setting bodies. A few important ones like the International Plant Protection Convention, Codex, and the World Organization for Animal Health, to name just a few. But some thoughts on trade, but this forum that we're having today is really, really important because we're giving trade the mention and the focus that it really needs.
We have more right after this.
AgroMayor Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, AgroMiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgroMiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Don't let your soils become tainted and unproductive from excess salts. Take care of your crops while caring for your soil. Cation X5 Plus by AgroPlante is a soil conditioner meant to maximize water penetration by combating harmful salts in the soil, which can injure your crops and bottom line. Cation X5 Plus also corrects sulfur and calcium plant deficiencies. AgroPlante wants to help you grow your crop. Contact us today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplante.com. Welcome back. We continue with the AgriPulse webinar, Sustainable Solutions for Zero Hunger by 2030 panel.
With that, let me do a quick introduction of Ambassador Nestor Forrester Jr., a good friend of ours here in Washington, D.C. Hello, sir. Two or three things. This guy is very experienced. Mr. Ambassador has spent time in Canada, Costa Rica, and a great deal of time here in our country of the U.S. Three times, I believe, to the embassy, a couple of consulates, And my goodness, the world that he's worked on include trade negotiations, intellectual property, financial policy, political affairs, international law, administration, and IT. So, and we'll throw agriculture production in there because everybody eats and that gives you credit. So thank you, sir. He has been in this role for some time, initially as the chargé, and in October of 2020, became the ambassador, and we are thrilled that you elected or were allowed to stay, Ambassador. Maybe you can share a few minutes of your own thoughts, because I know you all have been very, very engaged on this UN food systems, including your time, not yours, but Minister Teresa Cristina's time in Rome. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Ambassador McKinney. Ambassador Fifield, good afternoon, everyone. I apologize for the tardiness, you know, caused by some technical glitches. But let me just jump right in, Ambassador McKinney. You know, the importance of the Food System Summit for, you know, all agricultural producing countries cannot be exaggerated. And we think we should not miss the larger picture in terms of achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, including ending hunger, and tackling food insecurity at all levels. And we do think that food systems have a key role in promoting economic growth and fostering social inclusion and protecting the environment while contributing to the 2030 agenda. We think that the summit should acknowledge the central roles played by both technology and productivity growth for agriculture, especially in the achievement of the SDGs. And, you know, we have many challenges to our food system, demanding a holistic and a pragmatic response. And I saw much of that in the responses of Ambassador Fifield in the previous discussion, which I had been hearing but could not join with my video. And, you know, I frankly believe that the Brazilian agricultural revolution of the past 50 years can work as a paradigm for what can be achieved globally if we put together technology, sustainability, and free trade. Yes. We don't see any role for curbing trade, for introducing restrictions and new trade barriers, especially in the vital sector of agriculture and livestock. So, you know, as you know, as you are aware, Ambassador McKinney, you know, in the past 50 years, Brazil, through research, through science-based agriculture, through a focus on sustainability, we have produced amazing results. Just to mention one thing, between 1976 and 2016, production increased, agricultural production in Brazil increased fourfold, while the area under cultivation grew only by a third, only by 33%. Perhaps I should also give an example from animal agriculture. Yes. Between 1990 and 2018, Brazilian beef production increased by over 100%, almost 140%, while the area for cattle grazing decreased by 15%. So that has allowed Brazil to expand its planted area while also maintaining a huge part of our territory, about two-thirds of the Brazilian territory under native vegetation. So Brazil is ready to play its role. You mentioned the leadership of Minister Teresa Cristina, our Minister of Agriculture and Livestock. And she has introduced several programs, including the low carbon agriculture program, that what we call in Portuguese ABC program, with the support of the World Bank, which has enabled the expansion of low carbon agriculture models in Brazil, including the integration between crop, forests, and livestock production. And let me just say that, you know, Brazil is ready to play its role in sharing its successful experience in developing tropical agriculture, as I said, science-based, sustainable agriculture. And we think that, you know, as an end result of the upcoming summit, we should have, you know, a push for more cooperation, for freer trade in foodstuffs and agricultural products around the world.
You can find more at agripulse.com. That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to know more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.